the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play.
Welcome back to the show and my discussion with Richard Rosen, the author of A Buffalo in the House, the true story of a man, an animal, and the American West. We are looking at photographs of a buffalo that was taken in by a couple, and you can see those photographs by clicking the purple Look While You Listen button on the Talk Zone homepage. Richard, we're listening right now to the strains of the song Home on the Range that you probably, like I, remember when we were kids. I mean, this is an old traditional song that I think I remember learning or singing when I was in grade school. Do you also recall the song?
Of course.
And, you know, I found that after reading your book and when I was starting to prepare for our conversation today, that song started going through my mind. And I realized I only knew, like, you know, the chorus of it. And, you know, I guess I used to kind of think, oh, this song's kind of corny. But I looked up the lyrics, and actually, Richard, they're quite lovely. And they really reflect to me the natural beauty of the prairies that the buffaloes were and still are in some places so much a part of. And it evoked the past for me and the present. And so again, the words to Home on the Range are at the bottom of this page of photographs. And if I can, I'm going to try and import the music so we can all kind of remember that. But let's talk a little bit about how Roger, his sight was kind of more expanded, and he himself got involved in trying to help restore some of the herds. And so on picture number 18, we have where Roger and Charlie visited Taos Pueblo, if I'm saying that correctly. Mm-hmm. What was, briefly, what was this about, and what was Roger trying to do?
Well, there was a phase during which Charlie became, with Roger's help, a kind of ambassador for all buffalo, and appeared at some fairs and festivals. And Roger took him to the Taos Pueblo, which is about an hour and a half from Santa Fe, the Pueblo Indians. And you know, it's a big reservation where the buffalo, which once supported the culture, is now kind of a forgotten part of it, except that in the distance they have a tiny, small herd of buffalo, but none of the children there have ever seen a buffalo up close. So Roger took Charlie there, and I think that's in the picture, and showed him to the school children.
Mm-hmm.
Got to come up and touch his fur, and in a kind of sad, poignant moment, touch the animal that was the basis for their ancestors' lives.
Mm-hmm.
So Charlie really touched a lot of people in that way. As he did me, he reintroduced me to the buffalo and its meaning to our culture and its role in the tragedy of the American Indians genocide. And also was a reminder of the fact that the buffalo are still a demonized species. They are in trouble. They are being harmed and even slaughtered unnecessarily in and around Yellowstone National Park.
Well, how is this possible? And we have a picture of a herd of buffalo in Yellowstone National Park, which I had visited and loved as a child. And this really, really surprised me. And I think most people probably are not aware that, again, the bison, which, of course, is the technical term. We call them buffalo also. They're kind of interchangeable. But that they're again, caught in the middle. So what is happening there?
Well, it's a very sad, eerie echo of the slaughter of the buffalo in the 20th century. The numbers here are much smaller, but the hatred for the buffalo that so many people feel in the West is still there, and it's centered on this herd of about 4,000 buffalo, the one continuously wild herd of buffalo in this country that live in Yellowstone. began with three or four buffalo in the 1870s that somehow escaped slaughter and ended up in what would become Yellowstone. And now there's a very nice herd of them, and they're not fenced in. The problem is every spring when they kind of run out of food, a lot of the buffalo walk out of Yellowstone. Of course, they don't know they're leaving Yellowstone.
Of course.
They walk out of Yellowstone to lower elevations where there's going to be less snow, more grass for them, and where the mothers can give birth in the spring. So the problem is when they leave Yellowstone, they fall under the jurisdiction of the Montana Department of Livestock. When they're in Yellowstone, they're managed by the National Park Service.
Mm-hmm. And protected.
Very peculiar story, sad. But when they leave, then they're under the jurisdiction of the livestock agents of Montana. And of course, their job is to manage livestock. Why they have been given the job by the federal government of looking after the buffalo, God knows. But because they have this kind of historical, the agents and the cattle ranchers and the cowboys, the old guard in Montana, have this lifelong historical hatred of buffalo because they are the enemies of grazing cattle.
Mm-hmm.
They try to round these buffalo up and send them back into the park, and if they can't, they capture them and test them for a disease called brucellosis that they're afraid the buffalo will give to their cattle.
And you mentioned in the book, and from what I've read in other sites when I was doing some research, that is not the case. The buffalo do not transmit this disease.
Well, here's the thing. It is a kind of specious issue because although, yes, some buffalo do carry brucellosis,
uh-huh.
It could give it to cattle, and that would cause the cattle to abort their fetuses.
Mm.
Not a good thing.
Right.
You can't sell cattle that have been exposed to brucellosis.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are almost no cattle around, and in order for a buffalo to transmit this disease to cattle, this is what has to happen. A female buffalo has to give birth to a dead baby, has to have an aborted birth,
mm-hmm.
and a cow or steer has to come up and lick the infected fetus within a few hours in order to get the brucellosis, because the bacteria dies.
Oh.
The only way to transmit it, and I don't think anybody will be surprised to learn that there's no record of a single instance of this,
okay.
But it remains an abstract threat and a threat to the cattle industry, even though Montana only produces like 1 or 2% of the beef cattle in this country, believe it or not. Maryland produces more beef than Montana. But this threat of brucellosis is something that has been used for years to justify the hazing, the capturing, and in many, many cases, the slaughter of Yellowstone buffalo since the agent started killing buffalo in 1985, 6,600 buffalo have been slaughtered.
Mm.
And that's quite a lot, given the fact that the herd kind of is maintained at 4,000. So there are a number of groups that are opposing this, including the Buffalo Field Campaign, which is a grassroots organization that tries to physically protect the buffalo from being captured. But it's crazy because you can only get brucellosis from a mother, from a female buffalo, yet among the buffalo that are captured are many males who are then slaughtered.
Oh, right, right.
So
well,
you have to think that what's driving this is something much bigger than this specious threat of brucellosis.
Right, right. It's probably
age-old animus toward buffalo,
right.
Because you know, buffalo are their own men and women. You cannot hurt buffalo. You can't build a fence around them. The old saying is, find out where the buffalo are, then build a fence around them.
I know. I loved that in your book. Speaking of that, there is so much humor when you are obviously reflecting, you know, what, you know, Charlie would have said, or repeating some of when Roger is talking to Charlie. But your voice in the book, your sense of humor is it made me laugh many, many times.
I want to point out, though, that Charlie does not talk in the book. This is not Charlie's book.
Right, thank you.
There is at times some speculation what Charlie might be thinking based on his behavior and his expression.
Yes.
Roger did talk to Charlie. Charlie is not a talking buffalo.
Right.
He was a very real buffalo.
Right, don't want to give that impression. Now, some of the resources that you listed in the back of your book, I also put those links. So if people want to know more about the Yellowstone buffalo situation, there's the link to the Buffalo Field campaign that you refer to. And also for more information about restoration of the Great Plains, you know, I included the link to the Great Plains Restoration Council. And I suppose, Richard, if somebody, after they found out more about it, wanted their voice to be heard, would they communicate with those two organizations? Or what could somebody do if they do want
a
voice?
They could do that. I mean, these organizations need money and extra pairs of hands. But they should also contact their U.S. representatives because there's a bill in Congress. I'm not sure where it is at the moment. It's now called the Yellowstone Buffalo Preservation Act. And what it seeks to do is make sure that no federal funds are used for the hazing, capturing, and killing of Yellowstone bison. In fact, our tax dollars now are being used to support the unnecessary capture and killing of buffalo.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Talk to your congressman.
Okay.
The name of the bill is the Yellowstone Buffalo Preservation Act, and it's sponsored by, oddly enough, two Northeasterners, Maurice Hinchey of New York and Charles Bass of New Hampshire.
All right, and I will make sure that I also put that listed as, that as a resource on the website. But I want to just call attention to picture number 19, and if you want to see this photograph, you can click the purple Look While You Listen button. It shows a picture of Charlie admiring his modeling work, and it looks like the finished sculpture called Back from the Brink that you referred to before is being loaded to go somewhere, and we have Roger there and the beautiful life-size sculpture, and Charlie looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a wonderful photograph.
I'm coming full circle.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Let's see. I wanted to talk a little bit about where we could see buffalo. So clearly, mostly, if people wanted to see them, they're out west right now, Richard?
Well, there are herds sprinkled all over. Yellowstone, of course, is the most beautiful place to see a really large herd and the only continuously wild herd. I know that you know of many places in the Midwest. There's a herd, for instance, in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco.
I didn't know that.
It's a very small herd and which makes a difference because it's beautiful to see hundreds of buffalo moving together. But there are individuals that own herds all over the country that are raising buffalo for food. I mean, I'm sure you've seen buffalo burgers on the menu.
Yes, yes.
And, well, that's a difficult issue. But if there were no market for buffalo products, then you could only raise buffalo as a hobby, and that's very expensive.
Well, in a way, to me, it kind of reflects, you know, back in history that the buffalo existed for the sake of their own lives and their integral part in being part of the prairie ecosystem, and that would be a whole different conversation. But they also were a staple for the Native Americans. And so I guess today, if we could say that they can exist, you know, on their own and peacefully live out where they are meant to live, you know, in the wild, and yet still maybe, you know, be harvest is not really the right word, but, you know, still possibly a resource for humans. Well, maybe that's how it always was the case.
Right.
I do want to just mention that for people in the Midwest and especially the Chicagoland area, out at Fermilab in Batavia, there is a herd of bison. And Fermilab is a place where scientists carry out research in high energy physics to answer questions like, what is the universe made of? And they, their land was once prairie back in the 1800s. And so their founder, Robert Wilson, has done a lot of work and made a lot of the acres there into prairie. And they have a herd of bison there. And their website link is also on the bottom of my page. So you can go there to learn how you can visit Fermilab in Batavia, Illinois, and see the bison. We are out of time today, though, now. My guest today has been Richard Rosen, author of A Buffalo in the House, The True Story of a Man, an Animal, and the American West. The link to his website and how to order the book, A Buffalo in the House, is at the bottom of the page of photos on my website, wildaboutpets.net, and on my Talk Zone page. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show today. It has been a delight.
Thank you.
Next, and I've enjoyed it also. Next week, to commemorate 9/11, you will hear stories about the dog heroes of 9/11. You won't want to miss these little-known stories of the search and rescue dogs and the photos. Remember, all of my shows are archived as well as the Look While You Listen pages. You can access these 24/7 through TalkZone.com or my website, wildaboutpets.net. Thank you to my producer, Dave Olson, and thank you for listening.